This is the longest notes document I think I've ever written for one of our shows.
I know, isn't it splendid? I was so happy when I was writing it. I was like, oh my god.
I don't so know that I was
crazy stuff in this movie.
I don't know that I would say that I was happy when I was writing it, but I am currently sitting at 133 lines in Sublime Text here.
Oh, I didn't look at what this was. I don't have line numbers turned on. I did it in Byword.
Heathen.
That's not a heathen. I just wanted to outline with the formatting and the things.
How can you reference what line you're on when you run into an execution error or something?
I'm not really counting on getting a traceback my Python installation for this.
Oh man, I did a lot of Python scripting in Nuke the past couple days.
What tiny little feature was setting you off this time?
I probably have to mention it like eventually, like next show or two, once I actually write it up. But there's actually somebody who reads my site who had a question about some Python scripting, and I was able to build a little custom doodad for him that worked in his little production studio.
Congratulations.
I know, it was great. I answered somebody's question. Anyway. Do I sound better? I have built a very ramshackle sort of fort out of blankets and random posts and a portable clothing rack to deaden the sound in my office.
That sounds like fun.
I'm kind of like in a little tent here that I made.
You sound exactly the same, by the way.
Oh, it's terrible.
Well, I mean, on Skype you can never tell, but when we listen back, I'm sure you'll sound crystal clear and there won't be a hint of echo and you won't have sirens or air conditioners or MacBook fans or anything.
Yeah, well, I'm in like two-thirds of a triangle, so there is still an open gap to a wall and some other things that could reflect back some sound, but I'm kind of, you know, it's kind of over my head a little bit, so hopefully that takes the echo out of the ceiling.
Well, the best part about this is that it's a free sweat lodge because you've wrapped yourself in blankets in Arizona in the middle of the summer.
Yeah,
so, good job.
Well, there's no airflow in this office when we do these things anyway, so.
Yeah, might as well make it worse.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much else you could do to make it worse. I will leave it to the audience's imagination to decide whether or not I'm wearing pants, but, you know, there's that. We got all kinds of follow-up for this show.
What was our follow-up?
It's weird that, like, we have things to talk about that relate to previous shows.
Oh, we do? What is the thing?
We got some fan art for the first time. Episode 12.
Oh,
Marcus.
Yes. I always forget because I don't actually take notes about that stuff. But yes, it was wonderful. The little computer badge decal.
Twitter user Ben Goulding Huckle at Ben Huckle made the little made for defocused sticker to put on the front of a little Windows 8 tablet that says that has a little middle finger icon on it, just as we described before.
For the made for link,
yes,
similar badge.
Yeah, they should put those two side by side. Maybe we could turn it so like ours is flipping off all the other badges. But I thought it was pretty fantastic, and thank you, Ben, for that.
Or we can make ours like I'm with stupid, and then it could be pointing at the other badges.
And it'd be even better if it's the only badge on there. It's just pointing off the side of the screen.
Right.
Yeah. Sounds about right. It's on brand for us.
Mm-hmm. And how?
Oh man. We have multiple items of follow-up. I'll try and skim through these quick because I have the feeling that you have a lot to say about this week's movie. We got an email from your friend, as you like to refer to him, the roboticist.
Yes.
Mr. Jason Ziegler. Ziegler or Ziglar?
Ziegler.
Ziegler.
Mm-hmm.
He suggested a few potential technical solutions to the thing I was describing at my former employer where the computers were not physically present. And how I might have been using Cat 6, USB over Cat 6, which we'll get to the next item follow-up that will actually explain it. But I thought it was the important thing down at the bottom there is that he agrees with me on natural scrolling for mice and touchpads on his Mac. And I'm right and you're wrong.
Well, for the record, Jason Ziegler is my friend in high school, and he hated Macs and said that there was no point to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that PCs were better. And then guess what he's using right now? A Mac.
Well, he does mention that in the email as well, that once they moved to Intel,
yes.
And, you know, he could...
Yeah, I know. You just conveniently leave out the part where I'm right about something, just because You just want to shape this conversation.
No. That's a discussion between you and him, not a discussion between you and I.
Oh, no. He said it in the email. You just right. didn't say it. You just want to create this mythos of me being wrong about everything.
Hey, that's between the two of you. When he's settling an argument between you and I, that's something we need to address in the show here.
Ah. All right.
And inverted controllers in first-person shooters as well. He is on the same page as I am, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That'll be useful when Half-Life 3 comes out.
Oh, man. I only played Half-Life 2, I guess you'd call that episode 1, retroactively. The part of the game that they made the first time when they said they were making Half-Life 2. played that.
What? And
well, you don't remember that? They were going to make Half-Life 2 the game, and then they made it, and then it just ended really dumb at this really strange part, and then they decided to have, like, episodes after it, where they released other things, and I was like, screw that, because I didn't like the ending. And so then I never followed through on the rest of it. So I don't know what they're up to, but I know that they're never going to get to 3.
I do not remember that. I played Half-Life 1, I was very into it. I ripped the soundtrack onto another CD so I could listen to it separately. And I was aware of people playing Half-Life 2, and then what was it, Counter-Strike that came out of there too, didn't it? Or I don't know. I didn't follow any of that. But
yeah, well, it was that there was the original Counter-Strike that came out of the first Half-Life, and there was the remake of Counter-Strike that came out of the Half-Life 2 with the Source Engine, as it was called. But the I didn't care for it. I just don't like multiplayer shooting games. Don't do anything for me. Human beings are horrible and they're juvenile, and the physics of it bug the crap out of me. It doesn't make any sense. It's like, in order to make a good game, you have to make it so that you're bouncing around like a bunny rabbit and shooting a gun, and it's like, yeah, this really captures everything about this experience.
Yeah, I remember when they added the multiplayer stuff to Half-Life 1, and it was just very sad and lonely, and just jumping around these giant canyons and shooting at people, and wasn't super into that. But anyways, moving on to our next item of follow-up, because jam-packed show this week. Dear friend of the show, Thomas Cook, sent us a tweet explaining that thing that I was trying to figure out, but didn't actually know the technical details of, again, with regards to the computers in the server room. He says 10 and 20 meter DVI cables plus DVI signal booster, USB and audio over Cat 5, doesn't work on trash can Macs. Now you know. Thank you, Thomas, for clarifying that thing that I didn't bother researching. So that is how they had that set up.
This is really exciting.
Yeah. Well, I figure we got to mention it at least.
Yes. And thank you for everyone for contributing.
Yeah.
Just next time, try to say Joe was right about something, because I would really appreciate it.
You know, you're a little divisive with some of your posts and your commentary, so people have to choose a side, and they like to argue with you, because I think you like to argue back.
I don't like to argue. I like to joke.
Sorry, not argue, discuss things.
Yes, you just have a lighthearted debate.
Sure you do. I should also mention that today, just an hour ago, I installed the Nuke 9/Nuke Studio beta and have yet to open it, but that is starting to leak into the world, which is a good thing. It's been a long time coming.
Sounds really exciting.
It is very exciting. I honestly wanted to cancel our show just so I could play with it today.
Okay. I see how it is.
No, it's we have things to do.
An incremental update to a piece of software used for your work is more interesting than
this. It is more than incremental, my friend.
It's fine, Dan. You don't have to
explain it. It's the combination of the two major applications that I use every day into a single cohesive application, I hope.
I hope.
Yes. Still holding out hope for that super application that combines my edit system and visual effects, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
What's been going on? How was your holiday 3-day weekend thing?
Didn't do anything.
I love when your response starts with something like that.
Well, you always know it's going to be good. Yeah, I didn't do anything. This morning, in fact, like minutes before we're talking, I was talking with a friend of the show, I'm going to mess it up again. Anzje No, one of those is right. One of those is wrong. Anyway, so I was. He even walked me through how to say it.
You see, y'all just put that, like a J at the end. It's like Ange, right? But it's Ange.
Anyway, I was on his. I'm going to be on his show, Storming Mortal, soon for an interview, and it was nice. And it was, oddly enough, a lot about visual effects, which I wasn't anticipating. So that's sort of interesting. So, and there's that.
It's a good name for a show. Really is.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were they asking like technical questions about visual effects?
Not technical, but like, you know, structural things like how many people does it take to do stuff, and like how long do you work on a thing, and you know, and it's all stuff, of course, that we just, you and I know, varies depending on what the project is, the scope of the project. You know, how do you work for a studio but not always work on every movie that a studio makes? And it's like, well, that's bidding. Explain bidding, which is fun. You know, I like to explain bidding because it's something about the reaction that everyone has where it's like, that doesn't make any sense. And it's like, yeah.
No.
It's like, so it's just about money? Sometimes it's about the art. Sometimes.
Yeah, we like to pretend that certain studios get certain work because they specialize in a certain area, creatures or fluid sims or whatever. But, you know, it's, with like 15 people working on a single, 15 studios working on a single movie these days, it's, you know, whatever. There's a little bit of work to go around for that.
It still blows my mind when I read about how they split up the work on Guardians of the Galaxy so that Groot was done by one studio and Rocket was done by another studio. I was like, I've heard of splitting up a shot before, or two, or three, or a few shots, but they're nearly together and throughout the entire movie, and every single one of those is handled by two different facilities,
right? And rendering physically and interacting with each other.
I was just like, this stuff just sounds like a nightmare. Like, I don't understand. Like, it must have been something in order to get the movie out faster or something. On paper, they thought it would be a good idea. I'd be really interested to hear if that was, like, a huge detriment to production, because that sounds just like a mess. If not, then congratulations to them, because they achieved something that I think is impressive just in terms of logistics.
Yeah. I imagine it was a disaster. I can just imagine sitting there working on a shot saying, okay, what is happening in the rest of this shot since we don't have that work? Because I imagine they happened concurrently. Like, there was no, like, okay, Groot's done and now let's do Rocket, because then you would have to go back to the other company and modify things if something new came about. Anyway, it's...
Well, just based purely on my intuition and not at all on anything that I know from any other past thing that I could talk about. I will say that they probably blocked out animation with one studio taking the lead, and it might vary depending on the shot, depending on who is sort of the star of the shot, like which studio took the lead, and then they would hand that off with the blocked animation. They'd block in their animation. If something needed to change with the former facilities, they'd go back and forth, and then they'd start rendering these things, and one of them would take the lead on handing off either the elements or a pre-comp of the elements to the other place, and they would put their stuff together. I think that just sounds like a nightmare, but
yeah, because what happens when things physically interact? Like, what happens if you have to have two objects intersect or something, or they do intersect and they're not supposed to, if you only have a 2D render from somebody else who was working on it? Because you don't have the two 3D objects in the same scene at the same time. Like, how does that even make any sense?
I'm pretty sure they probably handed off geometry for what they had for animation, like baked geometry, probably Alembic files. But, you know, I don't know the detail level they handed it off or whatever, and you wouldn't be able to render it the same for the other facility. So they could have some very limited use for, like, shadow catching or as a collision surface, I guess, for Rocket's hair, but I'm gonna doubt that they use that as such. Maybe in a shot or two, but probably I bet he was just there for shadow casting. It's just sounds just really, really complicated.
Inter-visual effects studio politics about who does what sounds like a horrible, horrible thing to be involved in.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I want to know, but like, I want to know off the record, like all the stuff you couldn't say. Like, I want to know all those juicy details, because it sounds like like, it doesn't sound like anybody should talk about how smoothly or not smoothly that process went, but it still blows my mind that they did it, because it is impressive that they were able to pull it off in such a way that I had no clue that two different companies handled those two main characters mm-hmm. when I was sitting there watching it.
Yeah. And I mentioned to you briefly in our little robot-y deal there, but the VFX show over at fxguide.com did an episode on Guardians of the Galaxy, which was entertaining to listen to, particularly because there were some other nuanced opinions on it. It wasn't just, oh my God, I love... Well, two of the three guys said, oh my God, I love this. This is super duper fun. But everyone's friend and visual effects supervisor Mike Seymour had some good commentary on it.
Okay.
He was not super thrilled with like the super overly colorful, saturated worlds all over the damn place, kind of mixed with some of the weird, grittier interior stuff.
Well, the good guys and the anarchists are colorful, and the bad guys are not colorful.
Is that the delineation we're making here?
I think this is the delineation the art department made, because if you look at the interiors of the Dark Aster, they're dark. And if you look at the bad guy characters, they're pretty dark. Like visually, they have a lot of black in their outfits, because what else are you going to do when you are a villain but clothe yourself entirely in black? The good guys, you know, of course, you just have a variety of color, because that shows... The anarchist chaotic good guys get lots of color. The good guys with stiff upper lip and buttoned up attitude, they get a very limited palette of saturated color. So they get blue and red and primary colors.
Are we sure Ronan just, you know, wasn't trying to lose a few pounds and was feeling a little self-conscious, so he decided to wear all black?
We should have tried vertical stripes.
Makes you look taller.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to mention, as I mentioned to you, Ghostbusters is back in theaters this week. So great. Wait, no, what is my catchphrase? So good?
I don't know. It's your catchphrase. Yeah, it's you failed, Dan.
Well, it was a subconscious catchphrase that you kept poking fun at, so...
Mm-hmm. So
that it, makes it who not
really failed now. It's you, Joe. But
oh man, since I missed the opportunity to see it in theaters the first time around because I was negative 1 month old, it's pretty rad to see it in theaters.
Yeah, I never saw that in theaters. It was and I don't think I'm gonna go see it in theaters.
When you live in fancy LA where they show old movies in theaters all the time, all over the place, I guess you don't really. It doesn't excite you as much.
I just don't like people. I think I'm literally to that point where I'm that person that's like, going to the movie theater. Sounds terrible.
You are the reason Hollywood is failing. You know that, right?
Yep. Single handedly.
Just figured I destroyed it all. Make you aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean. But what do they expect? It's like you go, you spend $15, $16 on your matinee, and you see Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a fine popcorn flick, but that's it. That was that one experience you got, and you saw it on the big screen, and it was impressive on the big screen, but, I mean, I've got a 56-inch plasma at home. It's fine. You know, it's one of those things. It's like the HD revolution in home theater entertainment. It swept through the country and left people with large televisions, and so they don't really feel the need to go to the movie theater. Most of the time they should do that anyways, because most of these people bought really cheap LCD screens, and it clips out of the black, clips the black levels and looks terrible, so they should still go to the theater, because they should never have bought that television.
Yeah, is your plasma in 4K? Because Ghostbusters was reprojected in 4K.
I'm sure that really helped the matte lines.
Oh, no, I made that comment on Twitter. Like, I liked it in spite of its wobbly matte paintings and everything. There's a couple just, like, blatant bad visual effects in the movie that I always stare at, but I'm not going to point them out and ruin everyone else's fun.
Well, it's one of those things where I really appreciate Ghostbusters because it's wacky. Like, they did stuff for a compressed amount of time and for a budget on a very wide scope for the time that they did it in. So I would not even bother detracting from it for that reason. But it's one of those things that could probably stand some remastering, I think.
Yeah, they would have to, you know, tear it all apart and rebuild certain shots, because there's some gate weave in a couple of the 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 plates that just don't line up with non-moving matte paintings. But yeah, whatever. It's a great movie. I enjoyed it very much. And speaking of this being a Harkins thing, apparently they're doing like a classic movie Tuesdays or something. They've got really weird movies, but they've got a whole list of them on the Harkins website. And tonight they're showing Animal House, and I'm going to try and go see that.
Okay.
Because I never saw that one in theaters either.
Well, I imagine you didn't.
I like when they show old movies in theaters. Mostly because there's only like 7 people that ever show up, which is great.
Oh, that actually makes it sound better.
Yeah, and they put it in the biggest theater. Ghostbusters was in the largest theater of one of the biggest theater plexes around here or whatever. But it was great. There were like 7 people in there. There were like 3 teenagers, and then the rest were like 40-year-old dudes who sat by themselves and were very quiet. It was wonderful. Especially because it was 11 p.m. showing, but you know.
Oh, well, that explains it.
Yeah, the Tuesday stuff, the Animal House, there's only one showing. Like their classic movie Tuesdays, there's only one showing on one day of the week. But Ghostbusters is back for the whole week because it's the 30th anniversary.
Yay.
Yay. I doubt, however, that any major theaters will be bringing back this week's movie once it hits a substantial anniversary.
Ah, nice segue.
Oh, God. I guess we're coming up on 20 years next year, huh?
Next year, September 15th, will be the 20th anniversary of it. So this year, it's almost 19 as we're recording this, which is insane to think about. This is 19-year-old technology, theoretically, that they're talking about. And I say theoretically because...
None of it's real.
None of it's real. I mean, well, there's some things that are real in terms of, like, their props, but none of the software, let's say, is definitely... That part's definitely not real. And a certain eyepiece, it might not be real.
Pretty rad. Pretty rad. But in case you missed any of the copious tweets, posts, whatever, we were talking about hackers this week from 1995.
Copious meaning two. But yeah, Yeah, Hackers is a movie I hold near and dear to my heart because I saw it when I was a kid, and it sounded cool, and I didn't know that it was stupid. so it's really a lot of fun, and it's very 90s. And as we've established on this podcast, I'm willing to overlook a lot in a very 90s production of anything. And this one contains everything from like directing tropes to writing tropes to just like every one of those little things you could sprinkle through a movie, and it has fantastic music.
I'm not sure I would go that far.
You really wouldn't?
I don't know that I would use the word fantastic.
Well, it has Orbital in it.
It does start with Orbital, so that's pretty great. Within 2 minutes, there was Orbital kicking up. As I'm trying to concentrate on the story because it's been so long since I've seen it. Like, oh, wait, here it comes, and Orbital.
Yes. Although, I have to say, I remembered it wrong. In an earlier version of our podcast, I had talked about how Fifth Element should have ended with Orbital, just like they did in Hackers.
Yeah.
And they don't end with Orbital at all. It's right at the beginning.
They end with some really terrible song, and I was waiting for like halfway through the credits for them to change back into Orbital because you said so, but no, they did not.
No, I'm sorry I let you down. Yeah. I really did, because it was Heaven Knows by Squeeze. What's that? That is it.
Oh my God, Squeeze! They had more than one song.
I don't even remember them as a band.
Yeah, tempted by the fruit of another.
Oh
yeah, them.
And yeah, it's one of those things where you hear it and you're just like, oh, that song, and then you're just like, I had no idea that was a band. So you learn something new every day.
Yeah. So I watched this movie again as a child. I saw it when I think it was relatively new. I don't know that I saw it in theaters, but once again, what was the other movie I was talking about? I was like cringing at the thought of rewatching this because I did not remember it fondly. But again, as I started watching it, I began to love it. Oh, it was Fifth Element again that I was talking about. We keep picking 90s movies, but they keep showing a different part of the 90s, and it I keep checking, and they're all within like a year of each other for the most part, the ones that we're talking about. So they should have been made like sort of in the same swirling culture, but they're all going in completely different directions, which is fantastic to revisit because it says a lot. This is like, this movie has caused far more introspection about my childhood than really like I have ever cared to do. Like all of these things remind me about myself at this, you know, in my early teens. And it's like, I don't think about these things ever, and now these movies are making me do it, and it's making me a little uncomfortable, but it's kind of fun to do.
You gotta question the past, Dan.
I don't want to question the past. I don't want to think about the past. It was awkward. It was embarrassing. It was stupid. But then watching these movies, it's like, oh, there were a couple things that I can look back fondly on and be privately embarrassed to myself because I'll never say them out loud.
Yeah, I mean, it's... This movie is fun. It's not as much of a time capsule as Empire Records is, because I think that movie is a time capsule of media at the time and the after-school-y specials of the 90s. like, this is definitely not an after-school special, but it is sort of like the epitome of, like, weird, immature cultural ideas and notions that people had about internet stuff when there wasn't much internet stuff, because where they thought like things might logically head towards, or the things that people would even be doing at the time, like all, and how that would affect like the hacker culture around it, like it just didn't happen. it's hilarious.
Although I will say, if I had to pick like which crowd in the high school I would be hanging out with between Empire Records and hackers, I would have picked the hackers kids because they were weird and they played with computers, and I didn't really like hanging out in record stores as much. So yeah, this was my crowd, and the whole like they don't get nearly as serious, even when they're getting serious. Like in Empire Records, the most serious part is like probably Liv Tyler's like drug addiction thing. And this one, they've literally got like the Secret Service kicking their doors down and threatening to take them to jail, and it's still so surface level serious. It's hilarious.
With guns pointed at them.
Right, they got guns pointed at them by the government officials, and they're just like, whatever, no big deal, bro. I'm gonna go play on my computer now. Like, if anyone ever pointed a gun at you and said, "If you touch your computer again, we'll throw you in jail." You know, I'd throw my computer in the trash, never touch it again, and go play baseball or something.
I couldn't do it. I don't have that kind of self-control. Like, well, even when someone says, like, put down your phone at dinner or something, they didn't just, like, put it down so I can see the screen, kind of.
Well, maybe back when in 1995, when the technology was a giant piece of beige plastic with a tiny little plastic screen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love how thick the bezels were on their laptops, too.
Oh, so good. So good.
I don't even know where to start talking about this movie. I have questions about like what was what was Dade's computer? Was that a luggable Mac?
No. He had a that was a PC, and I don't know exactly what it is, but I want to say it looks like a Compaq, like a portable Compaq.
The one that has like the attached keyboard that like detaches off the front. It looked like a boombox.
Yeah, and with the I think it was an Active Matrix. I mean, it might not even have been a real computer because I think most of those kinds of computers didn't have color LCD displays. I could be wrong about that, but it's certainly nothing that would display beautiful animated text like that.
Yeah.
Or project onto your face. But he definitely had a PC of some sort, even though the operating system, the pseudo fake operating system in this movie, is very System 7 influenced in terms of like the window decoration and buttons and stuff, the use of Chicago as a font, but it's not really, of course, any Mac operating system, because none of them would have had some of these wonderful features like fire and other things.
Giant like 40 point text that is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were a couple shots that showed actual, you know, brand icons on the laptops, and I saw Apple icons. I didn't see any PC badges anywhere.
No, well, Joey has a Mac for sure, and it's either a Mac 2CX or 2CI or a Quadra 700, and it might have been a Quadra 700 based on the time of this movie at 1995. And he has an external floppy drive, which doesn't make a lot of sense because there's already a floppy drive inside of that model. So I don't know what you needed the external Macintosh FDHD floppy drive for, but even that's Apple branded.
It was, it was better blocking, and maybe it was a faster read-write.
Yeah, and Angelina Jolie's, her laptop, the one that they all lust after, that one is, I think, like a PowerBook 140 or something.
Yeah, it was pretty rad, but she wanted to triple the RAM, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Triple like,
the specs she calls that make no sense, but it does obviously have an Apple logo on it.
Yeah.
and then there's just a lot of generic stuff for everything else, where it's sort of just like beige, but everything runs the same like System 7 looking hacker OS for all of the machines, regardless of what
that's
we
why
see
they had them. To customize them by cutting out paper templates and spray painting their keyboards and computers with camouflage looking patterns to make it look really cool.
Oh yeah,
like
that. Oh, yeah.
See where he just spray paints all over his keyboard to make it all fancy and camouflage. Just like that would never work again because it would all just be glued and ruined.
Well, what's really weird is he already did a base coat of tan or something because all the keys are blank. So he spray painted it tan and then spray painted the camo on top. So he can't read any of those keys on his keyboard, which I find to be hazardous if you're primarily concerned with typing.
Real elite hackers don't need to read their keys.
Yes, it's all touch typing. But still.
You know, DOS keyboard sells a blank keyboard.
Yeah. I mean, obviously when you're wearing sunglasses, it's very hard to read your keys anyways. So.
Sunglasses at night in his room while hacking because... Yes. I don't know, that fire text was just too bright or something?
Yeah. Well, I wear my sunglasses at night, never mind. Yes. But in that scene, something that I mentioned to you that bugs me is that we clearly establish he has sunglasses on. Several shots of him with sunglasses on. Shot of him close up, on his eyes, no sunglasses. Shot back again with his sunglasses on. This movie is just full of weird continuity errors and all kinds of crazy stuff that doesn't make any sense at all that they did for just film production things, in addition to all of the humorous, let's say, computer choices they made.
Yeah, I kind of imagine they probably spent a large portion of their budget on that server room set, and then they kind of, it seems to be a bit of a hastily made film, but who knows?
On the Gibson?
The Gibson. What is that?
Good question.
What is it supposed to be? Because, you know, the first time they say it, I'm like, oh, somebody buying a guitar. Because I didn't remember that at all. And he's even, like, making guitar little motions, Matthew Lillard, while he's talking about it. And I forgot that was the name of the fake
Science
server.
Fiction author.
Science fiction author?
Yes. It's a reference to William Gibson, the author of Neuromancer and the inventor of the term cyberspace. I'm not kidding. I'm serious.
I don't think you are kidding, but that's some nerd that just went right over my head.
Well, it doesn't matter because it doesn't make any sense because that computer is insane. Because the server room, this supercomputer that they have, is made out of glass, which reads every line of whatever's being accessed on the outside of it. And then there's also a stack of these towered things which have optical lightning effects that shoot back and forth between them.
The lightning was fantastic.
Yeah, because you should run your computer in such a way that happens.
Arcing electricity is great for motherboards.
What I love is when Pendulette, the, like, I don't know, technician security guard guy, is like, Mr. The Plague, you need to come down here. There's enough activity for... There's only
users.
One person on, but there's 10 users worth of activity, and then it shows like lightning being shot out. It's like, oh my god, only 10 people causes lightning to shoot out of this computer?
As this character is literally just navigating through a directory structure looking for stuff. Yeah. He's not doing anything. But no. my favorite thing is that their glass server room just has one big glass display that's like a 150-inch display, but it has like 2-foot-tall text showing the username and password unobscured sitting right there of whoever is logged in, because why? I don't know.
What I really love about that is it's actually not one big screen, but several large big screens that are stuck together really close, just like they used to do in the 90s with those video walls.
Yeah.
And so it's supposed to look really impressive, but it looks utterly ridiculous as the motion-controlled camera is slowly moving through the optical stacks of the glass rectangular prisms that are actually in the real world. It doesn't make any sense because it's like, wait, if you guys can see everything that's being accessed on the computer, why do you have a slow motion controlled shot of this going through all of the things that are out here in the real world? It doesn't make any sense. It's sort of like one of those, they didn't really understand what cyberspace was. It was like they wanted it to be like cyberpunk, but that's, of course, not how anything works. And so it's sort of this weird virtual reality of, like, filmed models and sound effects and light, optical effects. So it's all very strange because it doesn't make any sense for how the computer is used. It doesn't make any sense for how anyone's accessing anything on this computer. It's worse than, you know, like a 3D interface to Unix in Jurassic Park or something.
Well, it's all visual metaphor. One of my copious notes here is the zoom montages, because they do that thing repeatedly where they zoom through that like tunnel built out of motherboard hardware that is nothing. And then they like zoom down streets to show that they're like going somewhere. And then they zoom through a building. Presumably we're following cabling, and then they zoom through like this holographic server, and then they go all the way down to the file. So we're following it from the hacker all the way to the file through these like five different locations of just ridiculous things.
Yeah, hacker to file, farm to table. It's
server farm to table.
Yes, server farm to table. It doesn't make any sense. Like it's one of those things where it's sort of like a shorthand to someone that does not understand a computer is connected to another computer.
For sure.
This is how it's connected. And it's like, but that like is a really dumb metaphor. And because it's obviously moving in such a way that it doesn't make any sense for what would actually be happening, because it wouldn't be that slow, and it's not, it's silly. But the thing that I always find interesting is the number of inappropriate times they decide to dissolve between the real world and cyberspace. Like when his plane is flying over New York at the very beginning of the movie, and it sort of dissolves away to a completely made-up motherboard set with these huge towers of chips and things hanging off of it and lights. And then at the end of the movie, when they have that really awful matte painting shot of them in the pool, and then they dissolve like in some lights zipping around, like as if they were inside of the computer again. And it's just like, oh my God, guys, just chill.
I was like, willing to give them stupid. That stylistically for like just an opening title sequence. But yeah, I thought it was pretty hilarious that they went with the giant motherboard city thing. Cause that's just, again, like the first idea that you should throw out. But then, you know, they did it at the end there because they had to have the pool on the roof call back to the opening in there.
Yeah.
We need to back up. We need to go a little bit closer to the beginning because I have so many things to talk about. We're talking
to
about
get closer to the metal.
The social the times when he does his fake call to the TV station that he's hacking. Okay, he's hacking into a TV station for one, because this is on the precipice of everyone being terrified that everything is run by computers. They make that statement pretty literally at some point, but. He says his name is Eddie Vedder, which is great because he confuses a security guard into giving him the phone number on the modem, which, again, you can tell somebody read like one bullet deep on a pamphlet about what hackers do, and social engineering was on there. It's like, oh, great. They trick some guy by coming up with these buzzwords that make him think that they're so-and-so. And then it's like, there are so many instances where they're like sneaking into the office to like get physical location and then like plug in their little adapter into like the phone cables. And it's like, if you're there, just like go find a terminal in the corner somewhere and you're there. You don't have to hack into it anyway. But
but that wasn't actually hacking into anything. That was tapping the phone line.
Right. I know. But you're in the building, like physically located with the stuff.
Yeah, but he was in the Secret Service building. They didn't want to hack the Secret Service. They wanted to tap the phones so that they knew when the Secret Service would be coming for them.
Is that what that was? I didn't make that connection right away because of that fake little thing that they plugged the phone into.
Mm-hmm.
When Matthew Lillard has his butt hanging out.
Yes. It's very convincing phone tech.
They hack into a TV station where they're having a battle with an automatic pneumatic tape switcher at a TV station, because presumably the TV station is all just run by a playlist that pulls physical tapes out of their storage unit and throws them in a VCR, which, to be fair, those machines exist, but you can't fight with robot arms.
No. What they did makes no sense, because you wouldn't have control flopping back and forth like that. It was just silly. Of course, we get the text messages that they send one another. Mess with the best, die like the rest. All the good stuff.
I wish I would have known that back when I was accidentally sending messages to everyone in my school's computer lab. I would have made that my message to seem ominous.
I don't think you should do that, because saying someone should die is probably not something good. It's good for high school.
No. I think I accidentally just said, like, hello when I found the, what was it back in Windows 98? It was the net send feature.
Oh.
You could type net space send space username and type something, and it would pop up in a Windows dialog box on their screen, which it never gave any record as to where it came from, so it was funny. But as I was exploring, I accidentally typed in star for the username, and it lit up 300 computers in one room, and it dings every time it comes. So it was a very embarrassing moment when it all, because it says what username it came from, and I sent a message to 300 people on the school at the same time.
Dan.
But I think it just said hi.
Dan.
Yeah. That's as close to hacking as I ever got.
Yeah.
But I never did send any fiery text to anybody that says, get off my turf or anything.
Yeah. Man.
And to prove that these guys are hackers, I love that the morning after, he gets up and he goes straight into the kitchen and pours himself a 2-liter of Coke into a glass. Like, really?
I don't know. Teenagers do that. I mean, even when I first got out here after college, I was still drinking Diet Coke in the morning as my morning beverage.
Oh, God, that sounds horrifying.
Yeah, and I would have like 4 a day. but it wouldn't be the whole can. It would be like I would drink until it got warm, and then I wouldn't drink the rest of it. Mm. So I have very strange standards. And it was also free, Diet Coke. And so, moving on, we get clearly that there's tension over moving between him and his mom, and he's going to go to his new school, whether he likes it or not, and he's going to have to deal with things, and then he rollerblades to school in pretty much the best outfit ever.
Well, we skipped the part, which we'll briefly mention, which is the plot, that when he was 11 years old, he took down 1,507 computers with a virus that he wrote, and was banned from touching computers or touch-tone phones till he was 18, because that's a reasonable thing for somebody to do.
Well, actually, I mean, that happens.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't, we don't hear about it in the news very often now, but like in the 80s and 90s, like, people would get busted for stuff and then be suspended, not allowed to use computers and things.
How, I mean, well, that's something that could never happen today, because literally everything is a computer. What are you going to, like, not be able to check out at the grocery store because you can't type your PIN number into something electronic?
I think I was reading about somebody who had this restriction, and it's like they were even in trouble because they couldn't get, like, basically everything had to go through mail and through a phone, and that put them at such an incredible disadvantage. I don't remember all the details of this, so let's just move on before I sound like an idiot.
Cruel and unusual punishment is what this is, but I would also like to point out that when this movie came out, I was 11 years old, so it should have inspired me to hack in and take down some computers. What 11-year-old kid would even have ambition to destroy computers? But anyway, well, more importantly, let's talk about his fantastic tactical vest that he wears to school on his first day.
Yeah, the purple camo, and his wonderful rollerblades. Rollerblades are incredibly important in 1995, by the way.
Yeah. I'm very sad that Matt Alexander was not in this movie.
Wheels, an inline story. But he gets to school, goes, finds the principal. We briefly see a character we will meet later, without being introduced to him. And then he meets, of course, Angelina Jolie, our love interest of the film, and probably somebody important to the plot in some way, let's hope. And she takes him to class, and he's all like, oh, I'm not in your class, because that's not weird stalkery behavior. And then finds out that he won't be in her class, and he's going to find a way to be in her class, and that's exciting.
Yeah, after 2 minutes, he decides that he needs to hack the school system and put himself in the same class as this girl who tricks him into getting rained on. But I thought it was, I didn't get it until like way later in the movie that when he see, for whatever reason, he's looking for the principal's office, so he asks the guy on the phone rather than any of the other 100 people standing around him. But the Freak, as the character's name is, he responds by saying, like, I'm on the line with South America here. And it's like, oh, that's a reference to the fact that he's getting free long distance calls through his payphone, because that's a thing that they do later. And I totally didn't catch that. I'm like, why is he talking to South America first thing in the anyway? But then, of course, as all freshmen are required to be, he is hazed and tricked to go up on the roof of the school and gets rained on.
Mm-hmm. The pool prank.
Right.
How do you fall for the pool prank?
Why would you want to go swimming first thing in the morning at school? Like, okay.
With all of your stuff.
Yeah. Did your high school have a pool?
No.
Mine didn't either, so.
No. And like, the pool prank is just so dumb. And of course, it rains on him immediately after he gets stuck up on the roof.
Right.
So he's sopping wet, and she thinks it's hilarious. And thus, we go from his sexual frustration montage of how much he loves her to this, I'm going to get back at you, kindergarten behavior.
Yeah, where did that come from? Like, there's just those two instances of it in the movie where they cut in some footage from, like, a 1950s TV show where, you know, it's two characters falling in love, and then it's two characters who are violently angry at each other, because we have to know what his feelings are just beyond the expression on his face and the context of what just happened to him. We need it actually spelled out from these cut-in scenes that have no context whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't care for them. It doesn't really add anything. It just looks very strange, and but it does, I guess, underscore the juvenile nature of his behavior. Because who would be thinking about a 1950s movie where somebody was?
Anyway. I don't think that was supposed to represent what he was actually thinking. It was just a really very odd visual metaphor, and I have no idea why it's there. But that is far less interesting than. After he hacks into the school registry and puts himself in Angelina Jolie's classes, Freak sees him doing that and realizes that he's a cool dude and a hacker, and invites him to the Rollerblade Video Game Club, whatever the hell that thing was.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
the arcade.
It was like, do you guys have GameWorks, those gigantic complexes of video game, like, it's like a bar/video game place?
I don't think GameWorks exists anymore. There's Dave and Buster's, though.
Well, it's like a hardcore version of Dave and Buster's, but then with, like, a roller derby rink inside or something.
Yep.
It was the weirdest looking thing, but, okay, cool. It's this underground club where the high school kids hang out and play, fake video games and rollerblade, because that's what people did in 1995, apparently.
Yeah, well,
did you have rollerblades?
No. I was not coordinated enough for rollerblades.
I was a skateboarder, so I would have been the bad guy in this movie. Who skateboards into the server farm?
You're skipping over some important stuff here.
I'm so eager to get to so many of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like before they even get to that club, the arcade club, we have the wonderful moment where we're introduced to Joey, where Freak introduces Joey to Dade Zero Cool, and he says, I need a handle, man. I don't have an identity until I have a handle, and proceeds to rattle off a couple that he's thought of, and it's really sad, and we get the idea that Joey just wants friends, and Joey is sad, and Joey has problems.
Did you ever have a cool internet handle back then?
No. Did not.
Did you just go by your actual name?
No, I didn't. But I'm not going to repeat it on here because it's very dumb.
Mine was too. I'm not going to get at it too, but I used a dumb pseudonym when I actually wrote into the Hacker magazine that I used to read.
Mm-hmm. So if this was the modern day, this would be like, I need to think of my Twitter name.
Yeah, but now if you don't use like your actual name as your Twitter name, you're kind of a weirdo. Back then, if you used your real name for anything, you were like a nerd.
Yeah. You needed to have something cool, something nobody else had. You needed to be unique and have numbers where letters should be. But
yeah. You know what you needed to have is a tape recorder so you could get free phone calls.
God.
Can we spend a minute on this, or did you have anything else on Joey?
Not for right now. You can go into the phone freaking.
Okay, so again, this is somebody has read a pamphlet about things that hackers do. And yes, there was a point in time where you could record the sounds that coins made in a payphone and play them back and get free phone calls. But this is not how that was done. And that is not how you do that. And that is not the device one would use for that. Oh my God. All you have to do is They even spell it out with the hacker TV show that comes on in the middle of the night with the two gentlemen, Razor and Blade. All you need is a tape recorder. Put your coins into the phone and record the sounds, and then get your money back, and then you've got free phone calls for life. Which, A, those sounds didn't come through the headset. You had to wire into... I shouldn't be quibbling with the technical details of this movie, but I thought
that
was hilarious.
This movie is not strong on the technical details.
No, it's funny because that was a thing. The red box was a thing that people could use to make phone calls for free, but that is not even remotely how it happened. But
well, there was lots of other freaking techniques back then, but... Yeah, let's not dwell on this too much. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Let's move on.
Oh, God. But just
it is there for shorthand for a way that hackers would hack at the time, but it is not accurate for how it was done, so skip it.
It's not even just the way they would do it. It's just like, that's a thing, but none of what you are doing now is even close to how that thing happened. But anyway.
Well, none of what they do in this is close to anything. So, we get the video game,
yes,
which is also not a real video game, but apparently a prototype of Wipeout for the PlayStation that was actually rendered on Silicon Graphics hardware. So that was good that was there.
The fantastic concentration shot that we discussed with the completely unnecessary use of green screen. Like, that had to have been a pickup after the movie had wrapped, because they do that super long, super slow push into his eyes as he's concentrating. And it's very, very clear that that background is not actually there. And there is a ton of green screen spill all over him. And they must have just thought, like, they did it later in the end of the movie. Even longer shot and completely useless as well there. And they're like, you know what? We should have one of those in the beginning to show that when he gets in the zone, this is what the shot looks like. And it's just like, wow, you really should not have done that. Or just found like an arcade or something where you can put the background out of focus and do it for real. But good Lord, was that distracting.
I didn't care for that, but the important plot point here is that he is a total jerk, and says that's a nice score for
there?
Yeah, because he says that's a nice score for a girl. So that was stupid.
Well, you know, high school kids—they got to be mean to the people they like.
I know, but it's just one of those things that's just ridiculously dumb. Because of course we know that she's actually very, very intelligent and has already beat him at something.
It's worth mentioning for some reason that she is that stereotype of a very rich kid whose parents are never around.
Yes. But so anyway, our future Redditor / 4chan user, Dade, goes on to hack the fire sprinklers and causes the pool to leak, quote unquote, and gets everybody wet as revenge for the pool prank.
And we will put this in Exhibit A of things that will get you completely arrested if you ever do.
Mm-hmm.
Hacking the emergency sprinkler system of your school, you go to jail for a very long time. But anyway, that's not to mention the fact that that's not even a possible thing. But that was quite hilarious. And not to mention that nobody noticed or was suspicious of the fact that he was the only one with an umbrella. It was funny for a moment. But then, you know, Angelina Jolie walks up and says, "What's going on here?" Well, it's probably pretty clear what's going on here. It's revenge, and he has an umbrella. So, yeah, that guy did it. Anyway.
Yeah, and then we go to the scene with his mom, where she's asking him how his day was and what he learned at school, and he's like, "Revenge." That's cute that with their relationship, the biggest strife they have is that they've moved and he didn't want to move and he has to apply to a college and he doesn't want to apply to a college. And that's sad. It seems like a bigger deal if you're in high school than I guess if you're 31 and watching this movie. But yeah, it's kind of a sad little conflict there.
There are so many of those moments that just are completely glossed over. Like, he has that one shot where he's staring at that letter from the college where, you know, his name is on it. It's like, oh, this is dramatic. Is he going to get in? It's a big deal. And they're like, nah, we're not going to talk about that ever again. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then there's we go on from that to serial killer pontificating about how you could sit at home and do absolutely nothing and your name goes through like 17 computers a day.
I love that they used 17. Like,
yes,
17 computers per day. I don't know where that came from, but it just made me laugh out loud when I heard it.
Yeah, I mean, 17, that's a lot of computers, I guess. No. It's hilarious, though. And they have their little conversation. They go back and forth about, like, you know, who knows the most about, like, manuals and books and stuff.
Yes, because and if you know what those manuals are, that must mean you are an elite hacker, which is another thing they say way too many times. Mm-hmm. He's elite. Okay. No.
It's pretty ridiculous. And, of course, we have Joey with overalls, braces,
yes,
a backwards hat, and he's smoking. It's just like, okay, you could have dialed that one back. He didn't have to be, like, the nerdiest, dorkiest dork that ever dorked.
And then there's that slapstick scene where they make him go to, like, an AA meeting because he's addicted. But mm-hmm. He's just drinking coffee and smoking like any 15-year-old would do in an AA meeting.
Yeah. That's skipping ahead. But but of course, this is also where he mentions how he, like, accidentally hacked a bank across state lines and accidentally made it spit out money into the streets and how crazy that was. And they're like, well, you're an idiot. And then they start talking about the Gibson for some reason. They're like, oh, man, it would be great if you hacked a Gibson. And Johnny Lee Miller's character, Dade, is like, oh, yeah, hack the back door. And I'm like, of course the back door. It's the 90s. Everything's a back door. We need to talk about backdoor stuff all the time.
And then, of course, they do not address hacking a backdoor ever again. They just discuss the fact that most people are stupid and use three-letter passwords that everyone knows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's an actual plot point. There are four passwords that people ever use. Love, secret, sex, and God. Those are the only passwords anyone ever use. The super user on the Gibson used the password God.
Well, that one user did.
No, he said he used a super user account.
Yeah, I know, but that was one of the super user accounts. It was Margot's account.
If you're super user, oh god. These people need one password and they need to be fired.
Yeah, well, Margot should have been fired. She was embezzling. What a terrible executive. She didn't know what was going on. But it was a good thing she was an idiot, because of other things that go on to happen. As Joey hacks into the computer, and we get motion control camera shots in Euro style etched into glass being lit up, and yes, lightning. And then, of course, Pendulette calls Mr. The Plague.
Mr. The Plague.
Yes.
What was his job there? He was like sitting, he sit there and reads a magazine and then just kind of keeps his eye on this big glass screen in case something appears to be going awry. Is that a job?
I don't know. He's like the IT equivalent of a security guard, of a nighttime security guard. He's basically there to make sure nothing weird happens. Like a render wrangler.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he's like a render wrangler who doesn't actually do anything. He just stares at a screen and reads a magazine and wears terrible round sunglasses at night indoors.
Well, that's more Pendulette than the character, I think.
I never tried hacking with sunglasses on, or using a computer with sunglasses on at all. Is that easier? Is it better?
I think it cuts down on the UV rays, which interfere with hacking. No, I have no idea. So it's a wonderful scene, and we get Mr. The Plague's drug den loft introduced right, with that big crane shot. So that's a weird place. And we clearly get to understand very quickly that the Plague has some mental health problems and thinks of himself in some grandiose way.
Yeah, he doesn't have a superiority complex at all.
No.
He was wearing trench coats and skateboarding into his server room, and
man.
He has so many bad catchphrases. Well, and the first of his mullet catchphrases. Oh god, the hair in all of this is just like, somebody either just like poured half a bottle of gel on somebody's head and just like glued it to their forehead, or they just have the worst mullet ever.
It's pretty bad. And there's a lot of braided hair in this too. But the and his mom's hair is super frizzy. Like, I know she's supposed to look like somewhat shaken by the events of time that have ravaged her from her first appearance when in her home where everything's perfect, but She looks like she could use a trip to a day spa. She's a little rugged.
This is where they are tracing the call to Joey, and they're using their holographic red glass keyboard server workstation thing to find out who has hacked in and gotten a portion of their garbage file and where he is.
Yes, they're tracing the call because it's a modem, of course.
Right, and then, so then they just the like send that information to the Secret Service, who goes and kicks his door down.
Yeah. Well, you're forgetting the part where Joey takes the sweet yellow floppy disk, 3.5-inch floppy disk, out of the drive and hides it for no good reason. Although it would be a good reason later if he had known that he was going to get abducted. And we get to find out that he gets busted. So
in one of the best scenes ever, he's in the shower wearing headphones. Wrapped in plastic.
Yep.
He puts his little standard issue over the head headphones in Ziploc bags and wears them in the shower over the rail the little curtain rod, just because, you know, where are you gonna hang your Walkman in the shower? And then as soon as he opens the shower curtain, there are cops with shotguns, as if he were going to be in the shower with some sort of weapon and or laptop. Like, the police in this movie have incredibly odd timing. Like, in the end, spoiler, they wait until the plane is in the air before they bother handcuffing Mr. the Plague. But no matter, they just, you know, they don't want to be rushed. They want to take their time and arrest somebody. Right.
Well, Richard Gill, hacker enemy number one, a boner, as serial killer calls him, is a very interesting character in that he is probably there more for drama than for actual...
Right, he's moved around like a chess piece. Like, when they're having their little competition, they're literally ruining his life. They're, like, getting his credit cards declined, they're getting him arrested, they're having him being declared as dead. But then at the end of the movie, they're just like, oh, you know, let's convince him he's on our side now and he's going to help us get the bad guy. I would have such a grudge against these kids. I would arrest all of them and the actual bad guy at the same time because screw you, kids. You ruined my life. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, but see, that's that whole like juvenile mindset of like the you are correct because the other guy's a jerk. So therefore you win.
It's very zero and one.
Yeah, which is very predominant in this film, is like, it's okay to do whatever you want to as long as the ends justify the means because your feelings were upset.
Right.
It happens over and over again.
Which
and
is hilarious to completely gloss over the fact that the underlying plot in this movie is they are going to capsize oil tankers. Multiple oil tankers. Like, that's
to hide the money they stole.
That's less of a big deal than stealing Okay, take your $25 million. Who even cares? But you're going to capsize multiple oil... Sure, all around the world. Just ruin the wildlife just to cover your tracks for 25... Sure, whatever. Okay. And then the Secret Service agent Gil, in addition to being this sort of like chess piece that moves around, like they the TV people interview him multiple times about the arrests they're making. And really all he ever does is he just stands there, describes what a hacker does. You know, he's, well, hackers are bad people and they break into servers and they steal things.
Yeah. And so obviously we're supposed to root for our good guys because he's such an unlovable person. But at the same time, yes, of course they do horrible, stupid things to him they shouldn't have done.
Well, it's because he's a man in a suit with a gun and an earpiece and he's not cool wearing these sweet like leather jackets with off-center zippers and padded shoulders.
Yeah, he's the man. Anyway, so our countercultural movement moves on with our lovely hacking TV DJs, VJs, whatever you want to call them, Razor and Blade, who introduce us to Jolt Cola.
Yes, official and, sponsor of all things hacking.
Yeah, it was super hacky. That's great. And we get our scene with Eugene, where we're first introduced to Margot. In that she didn't read his memo, her holiness. Lorraine Bracco, I have to say, I really love her in Goodfellas, and I think she's fantastic. And I think I couldn't say anything bad about her there, and I can't say anything bad about her in a lot of things, but in this, she seems a little distracted.
Yeah, they should have just written her character out of this movie. There's no reason for her to be in this movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's kind of there in a comedy relief kind of a way, but I kind of don't want her to be the comedy relief because it makes her look like a total idiot.
Yeah. I love later when Mr. the Plague hacks into the FBI and she's like, what does that mean? She's like, I got all of the FBI records. She's basically just like, that's nice, honey. I'm going out. See you later.
Yeah, I totally don't buy the fact that they're having sex together. That's so strange.
How often was he standing on an Apple box to be even remotely the same height as her?
And his monogrammed bed sheets. His E.B. Eugene Belford monogrammed bed sheets.
Oh, man.
I'm surprised they weren't monogrammed as the Plague. But
don't call me Eugene.
Yes. So
that's Mr. the Plague to you. Oh, the lovely actor, Mr. Fisher Stevens. Oh man, Fisher's a good name. He should have gone by that.
He was really good in an episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and he's less good in the Mario Brothers movie. Anyway, so let's just forget it. Whew. Let's move on. We don't have time.
Dan. That he has he has the prototype Oculus Rift in his little den of hacking where he's playing video games when the Secret Service agent just pays him a house call and just says, you know, hey, what's going on? And he just walks in and he's playing some sort of virtual reality punching game. Back in the days when you actually had to, like, stand in a little round area that sort of makes sure you didn't fall over or hurt yourself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you still kind of need that. If you look at people playing the Oculus Rift and they have that thing that they can slide on with those special shoes. Have you seen that?
I must have missed that accessory.
Oh, man. It's so weird. Anyway, so everything that's old is new again. It only took 20 years. So way to go, Oculus Rift. I'm sure it'll take off way better than it did in this movie. We also get during the meeting, we get the video of the virus, which is clearly a man,
right,
standing in the very recognizable pose of a certain Da Vinci drawing.
Right. But they added a solarized filter, so it looked, you know, computery.
Yes, yes. It must have been a pain to hire this actor for this because this is nothing computer generated about this.
Hang on, I gotta check the cast literally list nothing. To see if somebody got credited for that.
If someone was credited as the Da Vinci virus.
The Da Vinci virus, yeah. Which is the first of many, many physical like interfaces to viruses. Oh, Mr. Enzo Jr. is credited as Da Vinci virus. A human being got credit for being a virus. That's great. But, like, all of these instances, like, there are so many goofy GUIs for all of these hacking tools that are just not, that's not a thing.
No. Well, I mean, that's what we said at the very beginning. The software in this movie makes literally no sense.
With all of the constant typing that's going on, like, when they do their hacking montage, I know I'm jumping ahead, where he's trying to figure out what the half a garbage file was, he's typing for, like, 2.5 days. But, like, everything else in this movie is just a GUI interface. So, like, what are they typing?
I don't know. But also in that same scene at the end of the movie, when he gets shut down and there's that big flash of light, then it goes to Joey to do it because he's the closest.
Right.
I want you to think about that for a second.
I went back and took a note of what the actual path to the file was. Do you remember what it was?
No, I don't.
Okay, the trash file is in /workspace/garbage.
Yes, well, at least it was invisible by three layers.
This is so great. Anyway, so he must have been, you know, somewhere near /workspace to get down to the next level of /garbage.
Oh, of course, because it required the least amount of insane typing to get there.
Right. All right, so we're backing up to we're somewhere in the vicinity of the terrible walk and talk escalator scene where the ADR is so bad that you can tell the actors were just hung over that day or something when they had to re-record that audio.
Yeah, it's awful. Their lips don't even come close to matching what's going on. There's all kinds of weird noise in this open office space. I think it's one of those things where they shot it and they didn't realize the sound was unlistenable.
Yeah.
And then went back and did it, but they should have tried a little harder.
Yeah. Yeah, it was there are a number of instances where they do some really bad ADR in this, which is kind of a shame, because I think I said they did that at Pinewood Studios, and I think they have some rather capable people at Pinewood Studios. Maybe the director didn't show up or something, who knows, but that was really, really like tore me out of the movie just trying to. I don't even remember what they said in that scene, but anyway. Do you have anything before they go in and threaten Mr. Dade? Because I have a couple notes on that scene where the Secret Service actually shows up to his house for no reason whatsoever.
Well, I'm just going to say about the escalator scene, we get this weird relationship with him and Margot again, with Plague and Margot, where she threatens him, like she's going to take away all of his toys and stuff. And it's like, well, but she doesn't really seem to be in charge of anything that's going on here. Right. And again, this is another reason why your character probably shouldn't have been in the movie.
She wasn't even privy to the fact that the plan was to blame hackers on this virus, which is going to steal the money and capsize the oil tankers. Like, mm-hmm. he came up with that plan without her and, you know, instituted it over the course of one evening between Joey's hack and this meeting. And now he's letting her in on the fact that that's how they're going to steal this money, because they've been working there this whole time. They've hoarded away this money in this garbage file, which isn't missing until they actually extract it, because that's something that they say earlier. It's just fake data moving back and forth. But they haven't figured out how to actually steal it until Joey gives them this out, in which case he writes this whole Da Vinci virus in one night and installs it, and then they have their big meeting about it.
Yeah, in a very public place.
Right.
So anyway, going on, like you said, to the getting the Secret Service to threaten him just because he's a known hacker.
And he's tangentially related to Joey in that he's friends of friends of friends who know Joey for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the note I took is I love that Mr. The Plague, who is apparently supposed to be physically threatening in this scene, who is very not, takes a baseball bat and hits his boombox with it and breaks it. Like,
oh yeah,
oh, his boombox must have been like $500 back in the day. Remember those things?
It was a double cassette boombox too. Like that was so you could record from one CD, one cassette to the other cassette.
That's how you know he's a hacker. Mixtape. Yeah, dude, that's how you know he's a hacker. He could copy tapes. He could probably check them out at the library and. You know how you do that thing where you put the tape over the bottom where you punch out the tabs on a cassette and you can record over them?
No, I never did that. I was a good kid.
Just like on VHS, there's a little tab you punch out and you couldn't record over them. But then if you put a piece of scotch tape over it, you could record on it.
Oh, well, that's what I used to do with the AOL floppies. Because basically you could make a floppy disk that nothing would write to by having this little thing in the corner.
Yeah, you would just take the thing out and people couldn't write to it.
Good security measure. So it was fantastic because it was a free source of floppy disks for a while when we were still using floppy disks. I've dated myself. All right, moving on.
No, I did that too. I used to make AOL disks into my version of viruses, which would just be like a .bat file that would delete your System32 directory, and I never actually did anything with them. But that was as close as I ever got to writing viruses. I'm making air quotes with my hands.
Why did you act out, Dan?
I didn't. There was one person at our school who actually did ruin a couple computers, and then the next day, like, half of the computer lab was missing, and so was this kid, because he was removed from the school.
Wow.
But, you know, I used to do things like, I wrote Quick Basic EXE that would auto-load if the disk was in the computer when you booted it up, and it would have a DOS prompt that no matter what you typed in would say bad commander file name. So I would do that to my mom for about 5 minutes until she would say, "What's wrong with the computer?" And I would laugh and I would eject the disk and say sorry.
You were mean.
I wasn't mean. I was learning how to program in BASIC. That's
how
you
were learning
that.
How to be mean to people.
Just, you know, my friends and family. Or write a program that would just basically just write a program that would loop your directory tree full screen for, you know, forever.
Ugh, you jerk.
What was it? It was a /W/A/S/O, I think, would do that?
I don't know.
Ah, DOS.
I didn't really use DOS very much, except when we go over to my grandfather's and I played Doom.
See, this is why growing up in a Windows household, I had to keep myself occupied with QBasic programs.
I got to play with HyperCard.
Yeah, lucky you. I would just write, you know, 5-line application batch files that would delete important things on your computer that I never actually used.
Dan. Moving on, let's talk about Kate's party. Oh, sorry, the super dumb dream before he goes to Kate's party.
Yeah, the dumbest of all. Like, he's threatened by the cops, and then in the very next cut, he has this fantasy dream where he's about to have sex with Angelina Jolie's character, and then the cops just barge back in and arrest them both for presumably having sex.
But not even about to have sex with her. Just the fact that his dream is he's just laying there. She breaks into his room, goes over to him, mounts him, and like that's his dream. It's just like I just want you in my life like this. This is very strange.
She does open her jacket to reveal that she's not wearing any clothes.
Ugh. Anyway, so I thought it was just stupid.
Completely unnecessary and beyond infantile in terms of a fantasy.
Yeah, and it's just like every other dream sequence in this movie.
But like it has to turn from a dream to a nightmare, and there's no like change in anything that happens other than the fact that the cops bust in and throw handcuffs on them both, which as you pointed out, none of them are even like, there's no like happy, sad, any sort of angry emotion in the scene. They're both just like, they're just standing there.
Yeah, I mean, it's very strange. They're very dispassionate.
It was probably a second unit shooting that scene, and they just went and kiss and break in and handcuffs. All right, cut. We're done. Moving on.
Yeah. Anyway, so on to Kate's party that he wasn't invited to, but Freak invited him. We get Nikon's super dumb photographic memory tidbit.
Right.
We get spandex. It's a right, not a privilege. And we get Kate and her boyfriend go into the room that they're in where they're ogling her computer, and then they just start staring at Kate and her boyfriend while they start to make out on Kate's bed in the dark. And then they finally mutters, I forget who it was, Freak or Nikon or serial killer. Somebody mutters what Kate's handle is, that she is Acid Burn, and then he freaks out because... Dade freaks out because he finally puts it all together and realizes that the woman in his life that he's feeling these feelings towards and doesn't like and kind of does like with his kindergarten emotions is also the same person that has been toying with him online.
Yeah, this moment is a lot like in Silicon Valley where Kumail was more in love with, what's his name? His code instead of the girl. But anyway, and apparently this party was incredibly difficult to get into, except for the fact that Mark Anthony, that Mark Anthony, is running around undercover with the dumbest looking sunglasses I've ever seen anyone wear. And, you know, he just snuck into the party to keep an eye on these hackers.
Mm-hmm. And how.
And he doesn't do anything. He looks around confused and then he like wanders off and we never see him again.
Yeah, and so anyway, she feels violated for all of 2 seconds and then starts talking about how she wants to triple the RAM on the laptop. It's very strange.
Oh god, I have a note here. We'll cut this out. This is a PG-13 movie, and I got to imagine this is part of the reason why. And maybe this is just a side effect of the fact that I was watching it on my laptop with good headphones. But there's the part where he's using her laptop because he wants to check it out, and she says it's too much computer for you, whatever that means. But she says the line. Where is it? I hope you don't screw like you type. Is the line she says in the movie. But she actually said the F word, if you actually look at what she said. So maybe, again, more bad ADR.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering why they bothered to change that other than maybe PG-13. But who knows?
Probably PG-13. I mean, they have the worst ADR clip of anything I think I've ever seen in Galaxy Quest, where it ruins the punchline to a joke where Sigourney Weaver was supposed to say the F word and winds up not saying that. And... she says screw, and so that's also terrible. Congratulations everyone for ADR. Yeah.
But then we quickly move on to them discussing how RISC chips are going to revolutionize laptops, and this one's got a something something P6, which is better than a something something. Like, none of it makes any sense. This is where
of course not, because it's also like it's a PowerBook, so it already
right. They're trying to connect on a technical level to see how much they have in common. Whereas they've previously mentioned in the movie that she has nothing in common with her boyfriend because all he does is stand there and look pretty or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they have one of those technobabble conversations that doesn't mean anything to anybody who knows anything about computers, but whatever.
Yeah, and we cut away to Eugene typing away after they've had sex in his drug den loft and the FBI mainframe and the threat to Dade's parents. And then we go back to them making the bet with what they're going to do to Agent Gill to get back at him. And this sets off our whole montage of sort of silly things that they do to him, to cyberbully and harass him.
Right. Which is a funny little, like, montage scene with the, you know, the main group of characters, but, like, why are they getting back at him? He's not the one who's in charge of all of these horrible things that are happening.
But, see, Dade hasn't told them that he was threatened by the plague. He hasn't told them that, so none of the other ones have met the plague or know about the threat that he received that way.
Right.
They only know about Gil, who's the guy who locked up their friend. So that's why it's all about getting back at Gil.
Let's step for one moment into overly critical, defocused mode and talk about the plot for just a second.
What we were doing.
Well, okay, so he doesn't want to tell his friends that he was Zero Cool because he's got a record and he's embarrassed by that, and it was a bad time in his life because he was banned from everything and he had, you know, his family trauma, all that stuff. But apparently it doesn't embarrass or bother him enough to, like, stay away from hacking and these hacking people and, you know, doing all of these bad illegal things. So I don't understand why he's embarrassed to say he was Zero Cool and he ruined all these computers when he was 11. I figure he would stand on that as a point of pride, even though he was kind of screwed his life up. These people would understand or sympathize, if anybody.
Well, yes, I agree with you. It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any sense why he doesn't confide in them about the plague at all. Like, that's just total mystery. Until much, much, much later. That he, for some reason, is just keeping all these weird secrets that don't wind up benefiting anybody, least of all him.
Right.
So,
then they get mad at him for giving the copy of the disc back to him, which really does nothing because he already had that data. Now he just knows how much they knew.
Well, but that's what he wanted to know, though, was how much they knew, whether or not it was enough to implicate them. And he feels that was enough to implicate them, so he wants to go forward with the virus when that happens.
Mm.
Yeah. And Margot doesn't really want to go forward with the virus, but her resistance to that idea basically amounts to whining a little bit. So it's still gonna happen.
Oh God.
Poor anyway, Lorraine Bracco.
Let's step back to the fact that Mr. the Plague sends a fancy clear laptop to Dade with a preloaded video message because for some reason, he couldn't just send the video message to his computer like he does later.
Are you kidding? Over that modem? Like, what do you think the bandwidth is for that?
Well, don't you remember the other part of the movie where he calls and says, set your computer to receive a file, whatever that means?
Oh, my God.
What does that mean?
I have that switch written down modem in my notes. I was like, what the hell?
Switch your modem from output to input?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. But yeah, I do remember, of the few things I remember the first time I saw this movie, I definitely wanted that clear laptop. I really did.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that was all the rage back then, was clear electronics, clear...
That's why I had clear floppy disks, like the sort of tinted blue and green, and yeah, it was great.
Oh, yeah, I had those. Like, we had a set of them that were, like, jewel tone, so we could have whichever one we wanted, and there were different colored labels with lines on them that you put over the top, and you'd write your own thing. And
I probably still have those in my garage.
Oh, God, I know I have a couple in my in a box in my closet.
I also blame Mission Impossible for that phenomenon as well, but they just had the clear one. They didn't have the colorful ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me wonder, why didn't they use the clear colorful ones in the movie? They just used those stupid yellow ones.
Might not have been out in 1995. I don't remember when we had the clearish ones.
Mm. It's like they just forgot that they needed floppy disks and had somebody run down to the stables or whatever, like halfway through shooting the movie.
Well, what was funny is there's only yellow floppies.
Right, there's two floppies and they're both yellow.
Yes, because obviously if you're gonna make a copy, you got to copy the color too. So we have two.
You know, let's not to mention the poor etiquette of Freak when he goes to hide the disc in the men's bathroom with the gum sticking it behind the little condom dispenser. He puts the gum on the part with the moving pieces.
Yes,
he sticks the gum to the part that, like, you shouldn't stick gum to.
Yes,
why?
Because he was in a rush. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. But there is one funny thing that happens from his scene where he runs and does this and goes back to his apartment and throws away stuff and has that dream that the FBI, Secret Service came after him, break in and stuff. And then he wakes up from his dream and it actually happens. He's like, whoa, deja vu. And his mom comes in and proceeds to beat the crap out of him. Because of this. And he's like, what are you waiting for? Just arrest me.
I thought it was odd that it was, you know, we're suddenly having dream sequences between the two main characters, but then he gets one too for just no reason.
Everyone gets a dream sequence except
for Dade gets a dream sequence. Dade gets a dream sequence that's fun and then bad. She gets a dream sequence that's just fun, and then Freak gets a dream sequence that's just bad. Okay, sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's great, and we get the standard prisoner being walked through the aisle of everyone threatening to do things to him, which is, of course, something that happened in the 90s where
everyone reaches through the bars to like paw at the person walking down the aisle in jail.
Yeah, no. So anyway, that happens, and he makes his call and cleverly demonstrates his ability to navigate telephone usage.
Right, because they covered up the buttons.
Yes, so he just gets the operator to do it, and talks to Kate. And says again, it's in that place where I hit that thing that one time. And, of course, she knows that it's the condom dispenser. And we get that lovely scene of her nonchalantly retrieving it and everyone just staring at her. Because she is, of course, in the men's bathroom.
The directing in this is in some places just so awfully bad. Because we cut into this scene and she's standing there, silent, staring at the condom machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she didn't walk in. Everyone's just staring at her. She's staring at the wall. And then she goes to reach behind it, and then she finds it. And then she's like, oh, maybe I should do something that sort of justifies why I'm in the bathroom. To which she doesn't put a coin in, but she takes a condom out of the dispenser and then leaves and makes faces at all of the men who are like, they refuse to even look at her. They all have their backs to her, like, you know, drying their hands or washing or something. And then she leaves for... Just like that scene was completely unnecessary, but okay, whatever, fine.
It was fine, and I thought she did a funny job of it. Like she like had her little attitude about it that was interesting.
Yeah, I probably just saw that attitude in rehearsal and said like, let's play that up a little bit, but it was just ridiculous.
It was fine. So we of course get her pleading with Dade for help, and he doesn't want to do it. And doesn't say that it's because he's afraid of his family getting busted or of his past or anything. Doesn't say any of that. Just says, I'm not going to help. And then, of course, she gets him to relent and make the copy. And like we discussed, second yellow floppy disk. And then the plague wants him to receive the file and go meet them at the phone booth. And there's that weird dissolve montage. So we can see he's been waiting there for a long time because that's relevant. And then the limo comes out and... like a shuttle leaving the mothership on a skateboard, the plague zips by, grabs the disc, and then hops back into the limo.
Presumably that's why he was waiting so long, is because Mr. the Plague was holding onto the side of a car rather than riding in the car, and it just took a really long time to get there at 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, cobblestones and stuff. The streets look pretty rough. And then for some reason, Johnny Lee Miller's like, oh, I'm angry now, and chases for 10 feet and then changes his mind.
I love that there's a jump cut in there because you can tell the skateboard was about to run into like a pole or something, and they had to cut away real quick so you didn't see that, and they had all that mist and fog that was covering up where they went to, even though you could then see the limo turning right. But anyway, he gave him the copy of the disc, and then he was mad about it for some reason. Yeah. And then he goes and goes on this multi-day tear hacking marathon where the other guys don't do anything.
Oh, well, no. First he goes to Kate's apartment because he's going to confess to her what he's done.
Yeah.
But then she's like, oh, no, be careful. This is too interesting what we're doing, whatever it is you're going to say. And I'm not mad at you or anything. Just come over here and pay attention to what we're doing. And then he does that. And then he doesn't mention anything about this for a while. And they proceed to do their time-lapse montage hackathon. There's a lot of montaging in this film.
And the montage, by all intents, is supposed to make it appear as if he literally never stopped typing for like 2 days.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't even take a moment to like look at what's on the screen. He's typing the whole time.
He doesn't need to look at it because it's projected into his face.
Right.
Which is another trope of 90s computer stuff, is that everything, like any display, was basically a projector on your face.
Yeah.
Because it was a projector on your face when you cut away to the other angle. Bad.
And the note I have here is, what the hell is with all the printouts? Like, every time they're intercutting him typing, his hands, his face, a pile of papers with just numbers just being plop, papers, more papers, more papers, more papers. Like, what are they printing out and why?
I don't know.
There's so many printouts.
It doesn't make any sense. And
would they go dumpster diving for printouts? Well, that's for memos and stuff too. But there are so many just like pages upon pages of. It's not even like a memory dump or anything. It's just like 5-digit numbers.
Well, I think it's hexadecimal stuff, but it doesn't make any sense.
I didn't see any A through Fs. I just saw all numbers.
I think there were on the computer display portion of whatever that was, when they also had like that 3D representation of the missing data. It was all silly.
Right.
And of course we get, at the end of it, we start to see more of the math stuff being projected that we saw earlier when Joey found it.
Right.
And of course the math stuff comes out of the screen and flies around. And the math stuff then turns into the worm. And all of those shots go on way too long. I think they made them and then we're just like, well, we spent all this money on them, so we got to use the whole thing. Like, don't trim it.
Computer programs and viruses are just like revolving calculus equations in an amorphous sphere of 3D world.
Yeah, and then there's that literally fractal worm thing that comes out of it.
Right. I love at the end, it just turns from equations to fractals. Like, okay, we're going to use fractals now because it's cool looking.
Yeah, here's this little sea creature. All right, that's your worm.
A little sea anemone made out of fractals.
Yes, so that's all ridiculous. And then he says his whole thing like, oh, I actually gave this to the guy. Good way to structure your time, Dade. And they, of course, realize that it's a worm and that it's going to do this thing. They still don't know about the virus that's going to capsize things, but they're like, oh, this is messed up. And of course, he says it's the plague that must be behind it all. And they're like, who's the plague? And he's like, oh, well, let me tell you about the thing that I should have told you about earlier.
Right.
And that's great.
I just love, after that, the super awesome scene where we find out about the virus on the subway system. Which, yes. Matthew Lillard is just standing there reading a piece of paper that is in his hands.
Memo.
Right, which it probably came from their dumpster diving, but like, it's just a memo, and he's holding it already, and he's like, hey guys, this is probably the whole point of this movie right here that I'm holding in my hand,
but
that
I haven't brought up until now. But it's dated the 14th, and today's the 13th. Oh, no.
Oh my god, it was so bad. And then my favorite part is the way that scene ends is Angelina Jolie says, I'll beep you, and gets off the train.
Oh, but she does beep him. There is literally a beeper.
I love that Dade has a bright orange pager. It's so great.
It's so cool.
Mine was sort of like a see-through grayish black.
I never had a pager.
Oh, dude. It's all the rage.
My first personal communications device was a Nokia candy bar phone. That I changed the faceplate out on, and it was blue with white lightning.
Totally. I had one of those.
Ah, boy. And so, anyway.
Moving on to the ridiculous rave that's going on in the middle of the day, and Razor and Blade are hanging out on the stage for no reason other than that's they've got to get across this large sea of people. And then a band starts playing, and then Dade gets thrown crowd surfing style back over the top, and Angelina Jolie is really, like, sad because, you know, she's mad at him because she lost Razor and Blade.
Yeah, and he does a lot of heavy breathing to make up for that.
Yeah,
right. It's very strange.
They have their meeting talking to a computer screen while a gun on a robot arm is pointed at him, which is hilarious because it turns out to just be a lighter.
LOL. And so they go and they talk to Razor and Blade, and they're like, oh, we don't know if we want to get involved. And then they decide to get involved, and they're like, you'll need an army. And it's like, well, that sounds really complicated.
Oh, God, just so much clever dialogue in that scene where one of them's just like, she's sassy, I'll keep her. Yes. And then, like, the next line he has is, she's feisty, maybe we should help. It's like, why don't you address the people talking to you instead of just saying things?
Yes, get on the internet and send out a major distress signal.
Right.
Hackers of the world, unite.
Right, while we're talking about this, I have to jump forward to that moment where, when they call in help from the hackers around the world, they use telephones to literally call people around the world who then hack with their computers.
What else are they supposed to do?
Send an email or an use the internet.
But
you're hackers, people.
But they wouldn't have been on the internet if you didn't call them, because they might have been using their phone line for something else. It was all modems, Dan.
Oh, God. Clearly, all of these hackers around the world have two phone lines because they're using a phone and their computer at the same. Like, why would you call them?
I don't know.
Put a message up on a user board or whatever the hell people use back then.
It's more dramatic because then they can talk, they can speak their languages so that you know that it's around the world, that it's in Italy and Japan and What was the other one? Norway or France or something? I don't remember.
This scene just reminded me of Independence Day, where like they're like, mm-hmm. the Americans have taken one down. Now we know how to do it, chaps. Send the message forward. And then it cuts to like Korea or whatever, and they're getting the message and giving the message to their troops. It's like,
yeah.
No, you just have to have one shot of all of these people around the world.
And the crashed one in Cairo and all that stuff. Yeah, right,
exactly.
It's the shorthand for like we've got the whole world behind us.
Right.
So that's all good stuff. Anyway, beepers go off. Beepers has hacked the planet. Voodoo people again for the second time in the movie. No objection to voodoo people. Good music. And then they set all of the New York City traffic lights to green. And this is of course that example of that ethics thing that I was saying earlier, right. where it's more about whatever personal ethics, like your personal feelings trump everyone else's feelings, because. Obviously doing this not good. Whatever ambulance was on its way to go somewhere, right. stuck.
That's how they do their cutaway from how are you going to handle the police, because naturally if you block like one road with a traffic accident, the police will never be able to catch you on your rollerblades.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they basically go like one street down, like two blocks straight into Grand Central Station, so the police could have just stood there and watched and been like, oh, there they go.
Well, and then they get down to Grand Central Station, and there's the whole thing, like, a serial killer needs to go man the phones, they say, and then they're stuck there in their phone booths, and it's Joey there for some reason. They don't explain how he got out of custody, or why Freak is still in custody. No, remember,
they let him go because they wanted to see if he would lead them to the disc, because they couldn't find anything on his computer.
Yeah, but then they caught him again, remember? When they... Free.
When he handed off the disc, that's right.
Yeah, so unless they were just like, oh, just joshing around, you're free. Like,
well, they didn't catch him with the disc, so they had to let him go again,
I guess. So anyway, he's there, and he,
smoking.
Yes, as he is wont to do.
As 15-year-olds who have been arrested multiple times probably will do.
Yeah, he's hardcore. He's elite. And they are hacking their stuff, and for some reason, we are introduced for the very first time to... the lovely eyepiece.
Yes.
Which does nothing.
No.
Literally nothing.
Nothing.
I don't think it's connected to anything and turned on.
Never show the interface. Yeah. They just, you know, again, what's old is new again. As you said, he has his Google Glass on. And in my false memory of this, having not seen it in years, I thought this is where the holographic interface came from, that they were floating around and maybe that was just part of the interface of his glasses. But no, they do that the whole movie. So yeah, no, there's no reason for this. Just to show that he's a really serious hacker. Although this is probably something that just got cut out of the movie because it didn't make any damn sense when they tried to play it back.
I don't know. It's totally unnecessary. And it like you said, it's not like Google Glass because it does nothing. He's still typing on a computer. Like, I don't know what it's doing. Right. Maybe it's telling him like how fast his fan is spinning in his laptop. I have no idea.
maybe the glass is just running Mavis Beacon teaches typing to tell him how fast he's actually typing, how many words per minute.
That'd be nice. And so they hack the Gibson, and there's rabbits and cookie monsters, and everyone's freaking out.
And circle dollies. Don't forget the Michael Bay circle dollies, because apparently the phone booths are sitting on turntables. And they're just counter-spinning them from the camera and rotating around to show how serious the hackathon is.
It's so ridiculous. And it's I. But absurd. the thing that sends it over the top is the fact that it's like it's dissolved with these shots of just random people walking around in Grand Central Station.
Right.
As if they're observing this event and are totally oblivious and don't care to this spinning phone booth. And it's obviously a spinning phone booth on a turntable, because the lighting's changing.
Yeah.
It's so silly.
But the more important part is these viruses that you talk about, like the Cookie Monster virus. Like, apparently the only thing that separates a hacker like Mr. the Plague from an everyday human is the fact that he knows when you see a Cookie Monster virus, the solution is to type the word cookie.
Yes. Obviously, that, you idiot.
What? Okay. and then the rabbit, which, I mean, it was a plausible description where it fills up your memory, just like a buffer overrun or something, and they're like, give it a shot or something like that.
Yeah, flu okay, shot.
That's flu shot. That's the way to solve it. But, like, the description of what the virus is actually doing is almost plausible, but then you're like, oh, just give it a shot of something.
Well, give it a cutesy icon to leap across the screen.
Right.
Of course, Margot gets to say the lovely line, rabbit, flu shot, someone talk to me.
And then cancer, brain, what's going on here?
Brain cancer?
Oh, God.
They're going for the colonel. Colonel who?
It's oh, my God. That was the best line ever. They're going for the colonel. What does that even mean?
Oh, God. I don't know. They're going to install drivers, and Unix is going to freak out.
They're downloading our .dll files. Quick. Oh, crap.
So absurd.
So bad. And then, then we get to the virus with the floating equations, mm-hmm. and then the fractals, and the root / dot workspace / dot garbage dot.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
and Joey's the closest one.
It's coming down to the wire. The police are running through Grand Central Station, and they find the phone numbers, and it's phones tied together, which is hilarious and clever that they're looping through multiple phones. But like, and the police go, "Darn it, they're not here," and run away rather than doing what they should have done, is just walk up and unplug the phones.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, God. The major plot point that always drives me crazy, even when I saw it the first time. Just walk up and separate that phone from that little receiver and game over. They're done.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they're hacking. The worm is a fractal. Mr. The Plague is shouting at the server. He's saying things. He literally says, "Come at me."
Mm-hmm.
And he says things like, "You talking to me," even though nobody's talking. They're just, you know, they're using computers. And then he's defeated by Joey.
Oh, and everything's red, because that's your emergency right. color.
Right, there's like blocks falling into place that are, you know, progressively turning red. It's like a big game of Tetris where everything just turns red once you win.
Yeah, that was so silly.
Because they wait until the very last minute to call in their worldwide help of hackers for some reason. Like, they're almost defeated by Mr. The Plague. And then they decide to start getting their global army involved.
Well, it's like they're late at first.
Right, because he calls it and said, "Are we fashionably late?" Like, what? Yeah. Why would you be fashionably late to a hack? That's the dumbest.
I don't know. It's stupid. But then their goal is not to take it down, but to cause problems. And then once they get the file, then their goal is to take it down.
Right.
So that's why they have that double down on destroying the Gibson. And I don't understand necessarily the point of destroying the Gibson, because they had said that all of the ballasts were computer controlled and that it was going to be a huge problem and there's no manual controls, which doesn't make any sense. And that if they lost the computer or the computer sent the wrong instructions, then it would be the end of all of the oil tankers. They would all capsize or have the wrong ballast instructions or something.
Right. And there's that animation of the ships righting themselves and the ballast turning from red back to white, and there's even like a thrown in ADR line where somebody says like they should be empty by now or something. Like, what? Like, you emergency emptied all of these things just in case, so what the hell was the point of all of this?
It doesn't make any sense, because that the threat of that is ridiculous.
The stakes in this movie are completely absurd, but the bad guy loses, the good guys win, and that's all you need to know.
Well, it's the 90s. You had to have an ecological disaster. so anyways,
one more thing I wanted to mention about this location is when they're celebrating having won in Grand Central Station, you can see on their little phone booth, somebody has taped up a sign, a little printed out piece of paper that says, "Trust your techno-lust."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that's there. Or what the point of it was.
To decorate their cubicle space, their office working environment. It was for positive office morale.
That's a little personal flair to make people invested in their work.
Yeah, it's like a hang in there, kitty. they get arrested and they have the interrogation scene where he does the really stupid thing of saying, "Oh, she doesn't know anything about computers, she's just my girlfriend," which is ludicrous, of course. And of course, Gil knows that's ludicrous. And of course, she knows that's not only ludicrous, but insulting to her.
She admires him a little bit for trying to take the fall.
Yeah, but she's mostly like, that's just stupid. And of course, that's interrupted by his mother coming in, and she's like, you don't understand. He's such a smart and gifted person, and you're trying to weigh him down. And
right. Ignoring the part in the beginning of the movie where she was super pissed that he plugged the computer into the phone, now she's defending him like he would never do anything bad with his computer.
Well, that's because it's like, you know, you can criticize your own family, but when somebody else does it.
Oh, right. I forgot.
Yeah.
How that works.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they care about one another. Remember, there was, of course, that scene where he put a blanket over her at night, because that's how you show that one character cares about another character, even when they're not currently getting along very well, is you put a blanket over them when they're asleep. We go on to them hacking, Razor and Blade hacking the TVs everywhere and revealing, of course, that all the money was being sent to an account. Do you hear that shouting?
We're almost to the end of this. I can't believe we've talked so long about this movie that has no plot, but we get to the end date scene where they've been vindicated and the bad guy's been arrested. Well, the bad guy will be arrested. Lorraine Bracco has been arrested, but they haven't got yet Mr. the Plague yet because apparently he disappeared out of bed and went immediately onto an airplane. But when they have their scene at the end there and they say, they decided you won because apparently he couldn't get a date any other way, I thought he was wearing a dress too. I don't know what he was wearing, some sort of goofy suit jacket over this weird shirt that went down to his knees, but I thought they were both wearing dresses out of solidarity because neither of them won.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about. It does appear that way. It was like some sort of a frock coat. But they have their little swimmy scene, and they hack the lights on the city skyline to say crash and burn.
And yeah, who did that?
The guys.
Okay.
Yes. Of course. And
apparently light switches are connected to computers now.
Well, of course. Everything was in this movie, everything was connected to a computer.
Foreshadowing a strange and terrible world, 1984. And the fact that
1984 and 1995.
The fact that serial killer says his name is Emmanuel Gould. We can't even address how stupid that was.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so moving on, the end. Heaven knows by Squeeze plays, and there's kissing, and there's the matte painting, and
yeah, they're swimming on somebody else's pool and taking their clothes off in public, which was probably a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then we zoom out to a computer circuit board city again. What did we learn from Hackers, Joe?
That it was 1995 when this film was made. That's what we learned. Our childhood is interesting in that we remember this movie favorably, and it's so badly made. And the parts of it that aren't bad are basically mediocre. And then the parts of it that are good are because they're so bad, they're hilarious. So it is a lot of fun. I still love the movie, but that is not a logical explanation to anyone. And no. I certainly could not tell anyone who wasn't alive in 1995, like, oh, you should check out this movie. Like, unless you just want to have your mind blown by how crazy it is.
There's no way they would understand the ironic context and just how embarrassing it is, because it's like looking at childhood photos where you go like, oh God, look how embarrassing I was back then. But that was my life and that's funny. But anybody who wasn't there for this is just like, is that what you guys thought this was like? Like, oh my God, you guys are idiots.
Yeah, I'm sad they didn't have any Hypercolor t-shirts or LA Lights shoes.
No, everyone was, it was too gnarly. They all had like chains and leather boots on and stuff.
Yeah.
And Matthew Lillard had every accessory anyone could ever wear all at the same time.
Yes. You know what they say, like, look in the mirror, take one thing off. Look in the mirror, take one thing off. And I don't think he did that. Some fun facts about this movie. The part of Kate, Acid Burn Libby, originally was offered to Katherine Heigl. But due to prior commitments to Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, she had to turn it down.
Oh my God. I am really glad she turned that down.
Oh my God. Could you imagine Katherine Heigl in this movie? In Angelina Jolie's role?
No, I could not. That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned in a previous episode, Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie eventually got married.
For 4 years, and then they amicably divorced.
How long after this movie did they get married?
I think immediately when post-production was still happening.
That makes sense, because if I was playing the character of Dade in this movie, I probably would have tried to marry Kate, too.
Hmm.
Yeah. I was bummed that nobody was reading 2600 magazine in this, which I think was out back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, there are references to 2600 magazine in the making of stuff.
Mm.
Apparently, the writer went to a meeting organized by the hacker magazine 2600 Hacker Quarterly, where he met Fiber Optic, aka Mark Ebbene, a 22-year-old hacker who spent most of 1994 in prison on hacking charges.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Most issues had meetups in the back there, but at one point where the one of the random FBI guys or whatever is reading something about like a hacker manifesto in the car with Mark Anthony, it looks like he's reading that up against the steering wheel of his car, but I couldn't assume that's what it was just because it wasn't called out. But I used to read that magazine. Yeah. And the only
you're gonna be a hacker.
Yeah, I was gonna be a hacker because you know, as cheesy as the little GUIs for their viruses were, I totally had a an AOL punter. Do you remember those?
No. What is that?
A punter was an application back in the AOL days that you could run that had a goofy little interface that when you were chatting with somebody on AOL, you could punt them off of the internet. You would kick them off of their connection. And what the application did was basically mass send HTML tags into the text box of the instant message and would overwhelm their connection and AOL would disconnect them.
So you're a script kiddie.
You could be a dick and basically click a button on this little app that you downloaded and it would kick off whoever you were talking to on AOL, which presumably was one of your friends because you're talking to them.
Yes. Congratulations, Dan.
But it was a silly little interface.
But we all know
just
that
like
you had no friends.
I had a couple of internet friends.
And after you did that trick to them, because you found it, and you were like, hey, check out this cool trick.
No, they had no idea what was happening. They were just like, oh, I just got logged off for some reason. I was like, yeah, well, because
I
thought it was
funny. And you just laughed quietly to yourself.
I thought it was funny. I had some sort of control over their online interaction.
Dan.
There were all these other applications that like purported to delete the other user's like AOL account or like to remotely violate the terms of service and delete their thing, which was it was not a thing that actually would do that, and I never bothered trying anyway because there was no way it was technically possible.
Okay.
But there was an economy for these little tiny GUI interfaces that would purportedly do bad things across the internet to other people.
Damn.
I want feedback to see if other people know what these things are that I'm talking about.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure you'll get emails and they'll be like, oh, I remember that too.
Were you not an AOL user?
I was an AOL user, but I was a Macintosh AOL user, so that meant I did nothing on the internet. You would sign on to AOL. You'd hear the whole modem screechiness of it going on with my then, at the time, fastest possible 33.6 modem, which is even faster than the 14.4 featured in this film. I would be connected to their walled garden and see buttons that I could push to take me to sports or technology or
to whatever the keyword of the week is.
Yeah. Remember when billboards used to have AOL keywords on them? Because that was an important way to get information about a movie coming out. Remember there was an AOL keyword for Star Wars? Oh, my God. And so that was a thing. And then eventually you would have access to an internet browser, and then that opened up a wider world of GeoCities and Angel Fire and spinning GIFs and horizontal rule bars.
Oh, yeah, the horizontal rule bar that was like the blood dripping.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Under construction. Shoveling.